Ladies and gentlemen, please help me to introduce our speaker tonight, Laura from Johnson City, Texas. It's all yours, my friend.
Thanks so much, Levy. Hi, y'all. My name's Laura, and I'm an alcoholic. And truly, by the grace of God, I've been sober since April the 6th, 1987. I'm excited to be spending the next few weeks with y'all. I was here last week and just had so much fun. Can everybody hear me okay? I've had to adjust my microphone a number of times this week, so okay, good. I have a four-year-old granddaughter who got hold of my computer earlier, so like 3 days ago, and it's taken me all of 3 days to figure out all the stuff that she touched. So as long as you can hear me, we'll be fine. So last week we talked about, and I just kind of want to recap because they're all connected, right? And so I'll probably spend a couple of minutes every week kind of sort of reconnecting the dots, so to speak, with what we're covering. But last week we talked about step one and the fact that we're powerless and that what we have is a spiritual malady that requires a spiritual solution. And step two is really where we start to begin that process of looking at what that means. But if I have not conceded to myself that I'm powerless, there's very little reason for me to look at step two. There's very little reason for me to spend any time on step two. If I am still convinced that I can manage, why would I need to access a power? So being defeated, as the book references, and conceding that to our innermost self that we are alcoholic, that we are powerless, and that our lives are unmanageable. And last week we talked about I'm powerless, and when I forget that, my life becomes unmanageable. Because when I know that I'm powerless, I ask for help. When I forget that I'm powerless, I get busy managing, right? And I start running on self. And so step two says that we came to believe in a power greater than ourselves, could restore sanity. And we hear all kinds of definitions of insanity. The most popular one, certainly when I got sober, was, you know, doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. The book refers to it as a lack of wholeness of mind, which sort of makes sense to me, but it was very difficult for me to grasp early on exactly what that meant. I've heard one of my favorite is insanity is doing the same thing over and over again, knowing exactly how it's going to go, which was very true for me in my drinking. And even after I had been sober for a little bit, my sponsor used to say the light at the end of the tunnel is a train, you know, and get off the track. But I was busy, didn't have time to get off the track. And I would come up for air after I'd been run over. So But as I read the book, as I read more about alcoholism, as I read We Agnostics and we get into how it works, what I really believe for me is that insanity really is self-sufficiency for someone like me. Insanity really is self-reliance, right? In We Agnostics in how it works in step three, which we'll get to in a minute, it says that selfishness is the root of the problem. Right. And it tells me in We Agnostics that lack of power is my dilemma. Dilemma is a problem with no acceptable solution. Right. People like us, I want to identify the problem and then I want to rely on myself to figure out how to get around that problem. Right. Now, I have to tell you, I have zero evidence that I'm capable of doing that. Right. I have never successfully solved a problem relying on self. I have created problems relying on self. I have delayed consequences. I have created additional consequences. I have, you know, all of that. I have never addressed a problem with self and come out with a better solution. Right. It's never been. Sorry. Hold on a second. My granddaughter's going to come put them outside. So sorry. It's dinner time for them here. Anyway, so I have to. Okay, so self is the root of the problem, right? The problem is lack of power. What happens? And it says the main problem for the alcoholic centers in the mind rather than in the body. These three things are important, right? Because if my mind is where is the main issue, and my root system is founded in self, then everything I think about is filtered through self. Every decision, all my perception, all of my opinions, all of my beliefs are founded in a root system that is selfish in nature. And then I end up with self-seeking and self-delusion and self-sufficiency and self-reliance and self-centered fear, all of that. It's the root of how I function, right? And if self only cares about two things, self only cares about self and separation. So for me, when I rely on self, I'm only looking out for me, and the end result is I end up separated from. So let's talk about before we get to Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I get so uncomfortable being separated from that I need relief, right? How do I get relief before I get to Alcoholics Anonymous? I'm going to wet it down, right? Over and over and over again. Because when I wet it down, I don't notice that I'm separate. It's not that all of a sudden I'm united when I'm drunk. It's that I don't care that I'm separate. The alcohol treats the awareness of being separate from, right? That's the root of the spiritual malady. I'm separated from God. I'm separated from you. I'm separated from my family, right? It's the thing of I love him. I was a sponsee and I were talking about her second step last night, and she's like, you know, like I want people to hug me because I feel so alone, but if they get close to me, I want to throat punch them. And I was like, that's alcoholism, right? Like, that's a perfect description of alcoholism. It's like, why won't anybody give me a hug? And they come to hug you and you're like, don't touch me, you know? Yep. Because I'm Don Pritz, who was one of my heroes in Alcoholics Anonymous from Denver, Colorado. If you ever have an opportunity to, he's got lots of talks on xaspeakers.org. He was a dynamic human. From Aurora, Colorado, and then he spent some time later with Tom Ivester in North Carolina. But Don used to use the phrase excruciating loneliness. And the definition of excruciating, right, is mental anguish, right? And that's what it's like for us, because I'm living in this complete state of separateness, right? And you're probably sitting there thinking, why the hell is she talking about all this? Well, right, if I don't have a gift of desperation around that separateness, And I don't, then I won't have a willingness to do what the book is about to ask me to do, right? It's so common in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's one of my biggest pet peeves. It drives me nuts that people will talk about, my sponsor told me to define my own concept of God. That is not in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, the book implies that there's never been any problem with God, that God has always been just fine. What the book asks us to do is lay aside prejudices, old ideas, obstinacy, and oversensitiveness, right? If I'm willing to do that, and I have a willingness to say there might, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is a God, right? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is a power that cares about me. If I'm willing to do that, that's enough. That is sufficient to make a beginning. That's what the book says, right? So for me, I was raised Catholic, and I have a problem with the Catholic Church. It turns out, I later found out, that every priest I had was in recovery from the very first church I attended as a newborn baby to where I was christened, all the way through my adulthood. All of them were in recovery, so maybe God knew something. But I never got anything negative from the church. But I also didn't get anything that treated my alcoholism from the church. And so if a faith in a power greater than ourselves was enough, we wouldn't have any sober priests. We wouldn't have anybody coming from any religious organization at all in Alcoholics Anonymous. We would be a stadium full of heathens and atheists, right? So it's not lack of faith, right? It's not a lack of belief. It's a lack of power, right? So, yes, I know there's a God, right? When I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, two things were true for me. One, I wasn't convinced that he was concerned with me. Things weren't going so great, right? I'd been sleeping under a slide and hustling pool, and I was in pretty bad shape, and I was holding him responsible for my sorry decisions and my choices, and I wanted God to just wave his little magic wand to make it all better, and that didn't happen. And so I was a little mad at God. I didn't think he was concerned with me, but also, and more important for me in my recovery, is I wasn't really willing to ask God because wonder if it didn't go my way, right? And that has been the biggest obstacle for me. Not the idea that there's a God or not a God or what does it mean or how should I define him, none of that. The biggest obstacle is self-sufficiency because my root system is based in self. My nature, the core of who I am, is all about me, right? So when we get to step two and we agnostics, hold on just a second. I'm going to get my book so I don't misquote it because my brain is not what it used to be. And honestly, it never was good enough to quote stuff very well anyway. On page 46, in the middle of the page, it says, we of agnostic temperament. What does that mean? And an agnostic is someone who doubts. I'm not saying there's not God. I'm a doubter, right? So for years in my recovery, 15, 17 years of my recovery, I would refer to myself as a hopeful agnostic because I questioned everything, right? And I hoped I was wrong, right? I had seen you guys. You were getting better. I wanted the God that you, I wanted the relationship that you had with your higher power, but I didn't really think that was going to happen for me. So I questioned everything. I questioned God a lot, just between me and him. I would say I can it's one of my favorite prayers. I will say, I can hardly wait to see how you're going to work this out. This looks horrible. You know what I mean? From where I'm sitting, it's all bad, right? Go ahead. Prove me wrong, right? And he does. And now I've come to rely on him proving me wrong. But so it says, yet we of agnostic temperament have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than ourselves, we commenced to get results. That's awesome. That's a promise, right? Two conditions there. Can I lay aside the prejudice? I don't have to abandon it. I don't. I just have to set it to the side, right? So can I lay aside the prejudice and can I express a willingness to believe in a power greater than myself? Right. If I can do those two things, then I commence to get results. And the next part is where we lose. This is what I think we get wrong. I hate to accuse people of getting it wrong, but gosh, they do. So even though this is the end of that sentence, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully define or comprehend that power, which is God, right? I'm not supposed to be able to understand God. If I can comprehend and define God, he's smaller than I am. If I can comprehend it and define it, I can argue with it. I can work around it. I can outcon, outthink, outmaneuver, as Chuck used to say, right? So I don't have to comprehend God, a power, any power, right? I don't have to be able to define it. I have to say I'm willing to believe that there is some power greater than me at work in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the truth is, like my friend Yisrael likes to say, me and one of you is a power greater than me. Right? That's the truth. And that works. That's a good place to make a beginning. Me and one of you is a power greater than me. Right? So it's not lack of, it's lack of power, not lack of faith, not lack of belief. Right. Religion. I'll just say this real quickly to you and then we'll move forward. I need to look at my clock because I can kind of get rolling on step two too long. But religion is a we thing. It's a group of people who agree on a set of beliefs about a power greater than themselves and gather and take action around their beliefs about that power greater than themselves. Spirituality, in my experience, is a me thing. It's I. The spirituality is about my set of beliefs about a power greater than myself, right? Alcoholics Anonymous, we gather and take action on a set of principles, not beliefs about a power greater than ourselves, but a set of principles that will put us in relationship with a power greater than ourselves. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous is. We don't tell you what to believe. We don't have an opinion, right? These are matters for which we are not concerned. We don't get in the debate society. Whatever works for you, right? What we do agree on are the set of actions and the principles that are in place that will establish a relationship with that power, right? We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree. That's what the book says. That way out is a set of actions that will, at the end, have created a situation where I'm in relationship with a power greater than myself. So I go to church. It's all good. I don't have anything negative, but knowing that there's a God did not keep me from taking a drink, right? Going to church did not keep me from taking a drink, right? Saying the rosary, drinking, right? I like to drink and pray. I would say the rosary, take a drink, say the prayers, take a drink, right? Every 10 beads, new drink. Right. So that's not going to do it. Right. Why? Because I'm not in relationship with, I have not been defeated. And I had not at that point, I did not have the gift of desperation necessary to set aside the prejudices and the obstinacy. So the prejudices, right? Those are my old ideas, right? The obstinacy, right, is that pride, right? Where it gets right here. Right, where they ask you to do something and you just want to, you know, throw a chair across the room, you're just going to choke to death on it, right? That's obstinacy. That's pride. I'm planting my flag here, right? And then the oversensitiveness, that's my ego, right? Don't look here, right? Nothing's wrong here. No need to examine this, right? And all of that is rooted in self. And self-protection, right? My alcoholism needs me to be separate from. My alcoholism feeds on the separation from, right? And it really is like its own little entity, right? And it needs food, right? What's the food? Fear, shame, guilt, remorse, separation, loneliness, self-sufficiency, pride, ego. These are some of alcoholism's favorite things, right? So I got to find a way to get comfortable not drinking, right? I got to find a way to get some power to keep me sober, right? And so how do we do that? We express a willingness to set aside these old ideas. And really what I'm saying in step two is that I am willing to say I'm wrong. Now, I don't believe that I'm wrong, just so we're clear, right? But I'm saying there's a possibility that it could happen. I know I'm right. I always know I'm right. You know what I mean? But I don't want to look bad, and I don't want to be in trouble with my sponsor or other people in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm just going to be like, yeah, whatever. It doesn't matter, right? I just have to be willing to take the next indicated action, right? I've always been disappointed that step three was not, and he did, right? Like, God could restore us to sanity, and he did. Have a nice life, right? No. So this step two experience, the longer I'm sober, right, when I am functioning from a place of self, I'm insane. Sanity is God dependency. And whatever, however you want to define that God, sanity is dependency on a power greater than myself. Anything outside of that is nuts for somebody like me, because I have proven time and time again that I am incapable of doing what needs to be done to keep me comfortable and unthirsty. I cannot do it. If I rely on self, that spring starts to tighten. Clancy used to do such a great job of describing this spring that would tighten internally with the alcoholic, right? And it just every day just gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And it's got to unwind. And how does that happen, right? We take a drink and It unwinds, we exhale, we breathe, all is good. So I got to figure out how to be here with y'all without that spring winding, right? And when I operate from a place of self, the spring is tightening. When I operate from a place of sanity, which is God dependency, it's not. So how do I get into right relationship with a power greater than myself, right? And I'll just share this very quickly. I was 4 years and 2 months dry away from alcohol before I got into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was very busy in Alcoholics Anonymous. Went to a lot of meetings. I had a lot of service commitments. We had a detox room at my club. I sat with a lot of drunks. I did all that stuff, but I was not working steps and I was not reading the book. And so when it came time for me to do that, because I was in so much pain that I accidentally asked for help in Alcoholics Anonymous, when it came time for me to follow directions, they said, do you have a problem with God? And what I had a problem with was the humanity, not the God, but the humanity of religion, the humanity even in AA, right? I had a problem with that. What I believed, and they asked me, well, what do you trust? And what I trusted was the first 164 pages of the book. I believed what it said in that book because the doctor's opinion got me. Right? The definition of who we are in the doctor's opinion had me. That's me, right? There is a solution seemed kind of fluffy to me, but more about alcoholism, I'm hooked. We agnostics, I don't really want to look there, right? But page 60, 61, 62, you got me again. So I believed what it said in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was directed by my sponsor at that time to go through and highlight everything it says about God, creator of the universe, creative intelligence, sunlight of the spirit, whatever. Highlight what Alcoholics Anonymous says about a power greater than yourself. And so I said about this deal, and I got to page whatever it is. I think it's 11, maybe it's 13. Hold on. I will get it. I got to page 10 in Bill's story, and it says, they talked of a God personal to me who was love, superhuman strength, and direction. And I thought, that would help. That's what I thought. I thought, well, that would help. And so I started there. And I've never needed to change it. To be perfectly honest with you, I've stopped concerning myself about it. I could spend 6 weeks talking to you about what it looks like when God's working in my life, but who that is, I've stopped being concerned about it. But I do believe that what happens for me is when I ask for it, I get love, superhuman strength, and direction 100% of the time, right? And so that's worked for me. I'm not saying that's what you should do. But I did know that there is a theology to Alcoholics Anonymous. We do have some things that we believe about a power greater than ourselves. And one of the false beliefs that we come in with as alcoholics is that God's not concerned with me. That was my other thing, right? God's not worried about me. I got to tell you, if you're here in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and you haven't had a drink all day today, right? It is a complete lie to tell yourself that God is unconcerned with you. Because people, if you have the alcoholism that I have, right, you can't get through the day and show up where you're supposed to be, when you're supposed to be there, not drinking, fully clothed, paying attention. That's not going to happen without a little grace. Got to be a little grace in there, right? I was just rendered sober. I was just rendered separated from alcohol. I didn't even mean to stay here at all, right? And here I sit. So when my disease starts talking to me about, you know, God's not concerned with you, yes, he is, right? Or I would not be here with you people for 1 minute of one day, right? That is the miracle. Clint Hodges used to say, we always talk about God works slowly. But on August the 13th, I was drunk. And on August the 14th, I was in Alcoholics Anonymous. That seems pretty quick. You know what I mean? And I love that. This is the miracle. We don't have to wait for it to happen. If you're here and you're in a meeting and you haven't had a drink all day, you're in the miracle, right? There will be more, but you're in the miracle, right? So the idea that my disease feeds me that I'm not going to, you know, God's not concerned with me or God's not paying attention to me, it's just garbage. If that was not true, I wouldn't be here. So first step two, what I'm going to say is when I get to page, hold on, I'm going to flip back over here. Sorry. My book is sort of a mess. When I get to page 53, in the middle of the page, says, when we became alcoholics, crushed by a self-imposed crisis, which seems harsh, doesn't it? Self-imposed, right? Like, but that's really what it is, right? I've been crushed by a self-imposed crisis that I cannot postpone or evade. The time is now, right? I have the gift of desperation, and I have an opportunity to pay attention to the solution. The time is now, right? We had to fearlessly face the proposition that either God is everything or else he is nothing. So they sort of spoon feed us through this chapter, and they say, we really want you to lay aside your prejudice, and we just need for you to express even a little bit of willingness. And then they get you to page 53 and they go, guess what? Here's the deal. God either is or he isn't. What is your choice to be? Right? And they close that loophole. And at this point, I have to make a decision. Now, I'm not making a decision to define God. It's not asking me to do that. It's asking me to make a decision to believe that there is a power greater than me, period. Am I even willing? Right? If you're here and you haven't had a drink all day, it's a hard argument to say there's not one. Right? If you have alcoholism like I do. So God either is or he isn't. And then my favorite, page 55. Y'all, I wish you could see my book. But I have, this is maybe my second most marked up page in my book because I love it so much. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. It's a fact. We found the great reality deep down within us. In this last analysis, it is only there he may be found. It was so with us. This next paragraph is so important. We can only clear the ground a bit. So if our testimony, if people in Alcoholics Anonymous sharing with you can help sweep away prejudice, that's the first thing. Enable you to think honestly, that's the second thing. Encourage you to search diligently, there's the third one. Then, if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. Okay, so I've got three things. I've got to sweep away, but I've got to be willing to sweep away the prejudice. I've got to be willing to think honestly. And I've got to be willing to search diligently within myself. Okay, that's what they're asking us to do. And then the last sentence in this paragraph is the greatest promise, I think, in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. With this attitude, you cannot fail. I can't even believe they put it in there. It's a guarantee, right? It's a guarantee that I won't fail. You know why? Because when they wrote this text, they had 4 years, three years of experience. Three. Like we've got 80, whatever it is now, 86 years of experience, right? They had three. And in their 3 years of experience with their couple hundred sober alcoholics, what they knew was if you're willing, right, to set aside your prejudice, to think honestly about the problem and the solution, right? And search diligently within yourself, you will succeed. That was their experience. So they wrote it down, right? Because nothing in the book is theory. The whole big book is based on their experience. There's no theorizing here. They're not hoping that this works, right? They've done it and it worked. So there's your guarantee. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you. Amazing. That's amazing, right? It gets me very excited. I love that promise. Okay, so That's what I'm agreeing to do in step two. And then we read through how it works, right? And we do the 12 steps. And after the 12 steps on page 60, we have the ABCs. Where am I at on my time? Perfect. Okay. We have the ABCs. A, that we are alcoholic and could not manage our own life. Okay. B, probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. Just so you know, I have the word probably crossed out in my book. So let's talk about no human power. That's my sponsor, right? That's my family. That's my kids. That's my folks, right? That's my employer. That's my friends. That's the human power. And guess what else? That's me. I'm a human power. No human power can relieve my alcoholism because I have a spiritual malady. Alcoholism is a spiritual problem. It's going to require a spiritual solution, right? They're telling us that again. And then C, that God could and would if he were sought. So what do we have to do? Seek, right? That's what it's telling me to do, seek. It says, being convinced of those three things, we are at step three, which is that we've decided to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. What do we mean by that? And what do we do, right? The first requirement is that we be convinced, there's that word again, that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success, right? They keep driving this point home. Because if I believe that I can manage, I can't get the whole payoff, right? If I still believe, if I have some lingering doubt that I can still manage, I'm going to miss it. So they continue to point this out over and over and over again. So it says, on that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. But the truth is, my motives are not often very good. My motives are really selfish. Now, I can dress it up so it looks like I'm worrying about you. But really, I'm really worrying about me, right? I can create a little talk, a little spiel, right? I'm good with words. I can talk you into believing I'm looking out for you, but I'm not looking out for you. I'm looking out for me. I'm trying to figure out what I need for you to do so that I can get what I want. That's what it looks like. And they're fixing to describe that. I'm going to skip over to the middle of page 60 or the top of page 61, where it's talking about the actor who's trying to arrange the lights and the scenery and the ballet, right? We need all of these people to just do what I'm telling you to do. If everybody would just do what I'm telling you to do, all would be wonderful, right? Because I do know so much and I'm not wrong, right? So I make these assumptions. My starting point is I know what's best for everyone and I'm not wrong. And then I act on that, right? So I'm in conflict. Because I can't possibly know all that. How could I possibly know what God needs for you to be doing, right? But I like to think I do. And honestly, I'm not really concerned about what God needs for you to be doing. I'm really concerned about what I need for you to be doing. So if only the arrangements would stay put, everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. I need to tell you that's not me. I have some friends that's true about, but I'm the next sentence. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. That's me, right? I'm not even sure they didn't put that first sentence in just to kind of ease us into the second sentence. You know what I mean? As with most humans, he's more likely to have varied traits. What usually happens, the show doesn't come off very well. So I've got a plan, and I need for everything to go the way I think it should go. So the end game is I'm going to get what I want, right? So I'm going to start out with you saying, hey, you know, would you mind just handling this way, right? I'm going to start out like that. And then you're going to say, I don't want to do that. That's not what I want to do at all. And I say, well, I know. But would you mind just for me just doing it like that, right? And you're going to say, yeah, I mind. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do what you're asking me to do. Well, the third time, I'm coming at you with mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. right? Because my solution to not getting my way is to get a bigger hammer. That's my innate solution, right? I get louder, I slam doors, I manipulate, right? I'm going to blow the planet up to try and get you to back off of your position so that I can get my way, right? And I would love to tell you that, like, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I was rendered sober and I've never done that since I've been sober. Y'all, that's total garbage, right? And I'm fixing to tell you my third step story, which I don't tell in large crowds because the other party in this story speaks in Alcoholics Anonymous sometimes. So I'm very careful about where I tell this story. But I had met a hymn in Alcoholics Anonymous because I needed to prove to myself this no human power thing. And so I got him, and we were completely incompatible. We had no business being together, and we knew that in the first 30 minutes. So we stayed together for 3.5 years. At the end of that period of time, things had sort of deteriorated, and we like to do all of our arguing. We have our home group at the time is a huge club in Austin, and there's like a giant AA room on one end of the building, and then there's what we called the half measures room in between where all the tables were and the coffee bar and the detox room, and then the far end was Al-Anon and Alateen. And it was really a beautiful piece of property and a really nice building. And we like to do a lot of our working out our problems in the half measures room so that everybody could see how insane we were and have an opinion about what was going on in our relationship. And boy, did they. And so some well-meaning person in Alcoholics Anonymous one day said, you know, the next time things get heated, you should just tell Laura, like, I'm going to take a break. I'll be back in 10 or 15 minutes. And let's just diffuse this for a minute, right? I am at this time probably 21, maybe 22 years old. Been sober like 3 years. And I told you last week, although if you weren't here last week, you don't know, but I'm Italian and Irish and Comanche Indian. So I have this, I have little tiny temper, little teeny tiny problem with temper. And so anyway, we get into an argument and he says, I'm out of here, right? We need to diffuse this. We need to calm. Guess what, y'all? That's in the book. Like, it says in the book, if things get heated, take a break, right? So he's just doing what it says in the book. But I hadn't read the book yet. I'm just not drinking and staying busy in AA. He says, I'm going to take a break. I'm going to, you know, go for a walk or whatever. And I'll be back in a few minutes. And I said, the hell you are. I'm not done arguing. So he went and got in his truck, and I followed him out. He locked the doors. I got in the bed of the truck. He backed out of the driveway with me in the bed of the truck. We lived across the street from a shopping mall. And so he went to the shopping mall, and he's driving through the parking lot in the shopping mall, hitting all of the road, the speed bumps, right? And I'm bouncing up and coming down, and I'm banging on the back window, cussing like a crazy person. And I always like to stop here and say, I'm so glad we didn't have an AA sticker on that truck, right? Can you imagine? I've never had anything AA related on any of my vehicles because you just never know with me. And so anyway, we're going, you know, and he's looking at me like, what do I have to do to get this crazy person out of the back of my truck? And there was a car wash. So he pulled into the car wash. I was really trying to time that so Levy spit her coke. He pulled into the car wash, and I'm in the back of the car wash. I mean, I'm in the back of the truck, and we're pulling in, right? And what I thought was, if I get out of the truck, he wins. So, you know, I had to, right? So here we go through the car wash, right? And I'm down like this, and the brushes are coming over, and the brushes are coming back, and I'm coming up and banging on the back of that truck and cussing him. Oh, my God. Come out of the car wash, and he gets out, and I can still see his face in the rearview mirror looking at me. I look like a drowned rat and a mental health patient, by the way. And he gets out of the truck, and he's like, oh, my God. Like, what? Right? And I couldn't remember what I was so mad about. And so we got in the truck, and I went home, and I took a shower, and I went to a 5:30 meeting. And when they said, how you doing? I said, good. Now, all of that's funny, but the truth is, here's where – I mean, all of that sounds like self-will run riot, right? And it is to some extent. But where that self will kill me is at the end of that story, because I went to my home group, and they said, how was your day? And I said, good. It was good. How was yours? That lie to protect my reputation in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? That dishonesty to protect my agenda, right? To protect self, right? That almost killed me in Alcoholics Anonymous because I was being fraudulent. Because I thought for sure if I tell somebody I went through a car wash in the back of the truck, right, they're going to have me committed, right? No, they're not. They're just going to talk about you. And they should. Like, really, if you're going to go through a truck, I mean, go through a car wash in the back of a truck, people in A are going to talk about you. So don't do that unless you're really thick-skinned. So that's the way self manifests, right? It's not so much that I got in a fight with my boyfriend and it didn't go well and blah, blah, blah. It's that myself will then tell me, you can never tell anybody that story, right? I will yell at my kids and slam a door and go to a meeting and talk about God, right? Because my alcoholism says, no, 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 nobody else does that. We don't do that here, right? This is where I get up on my sponsor podium, right? Because I always had a sponsor whose voice was louder than my disease in my head. And thank God for it. Because my alcoholism said, don't tell. Don't tell people how much pain you're in. Don't tell people about the crazy behavior that's going on at your house, right? Don't tell people that you're slamming doors, right? And then I had girls, and my girls would call my sponsor and say, Mom just slammed another door, right? So annoying. I put my sponsor's number on my, when the phones were still attached to the wall, back in the day, I put my sponsor's number on a notepad in case anything happened. I wanted the girls to be able to call and tell my sponsor what was going on. And that lasted about 4 days. And then I was like, that's bullshit. I took that number down and they never had it again. I was like, nope. If you don't know, you don't know. So the book says, right, in the middle of page 61, is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? I hate that sentence. I hate that sentence, right? But that's really the nature of the problem. Prior to working the steps, as they're outlined in the text, the nature of the problem is that it's not just that I'm not trusting God. I'm not even thinking about trusting God. I'm not even thinking about praying. Why? Because I'm seeking self. I am driven by my agenda. I am driven by my fear, my self-centered fear. I can't tell you the truth about how I'm doing. Wonder if I don't get what I want. Wonder if you think poorly of me. Wonder if somebody says something bad about me, right? Well, God forbid, right? That self-seeking behavior blocks me, right? So if we go to the next page, it says selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of the problem. How is that even possible? I thought you guys were the root of the problem. Surely he is the root of the problem, not my self-centeredness. It's my parents. It's my him. It's my boss. It's the, no. None of them have the power to, none of them have the ability to cut me off from the power that I must have access to in order to stay sober. Right? It tells me, and I'm going to just take a break from this text for just a second. It tells me that at certain times, the alcoholic will have no effective mental defense from the first drink. Okay? Not all the time. Just at certain times. When? Beats me. Right? When is that strange mental blank spot coming? I have no idea. Right? And it's not that I won't have a mental defense. I might even think about all the stuff that will go wrong when I take a drink, but it's an effective, I won't have an effective mental defense because my self-will is not sufficient to overcome my self-will, right? So when I'm relying on what's broken to address what's broken, I will fail 100% of the time. And then it says his defense must come from a power greater than himself, right? So now we read the next paragraph, right? So our troubles we think are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot. And then they put that little comma, right? The next time we have an AA convention, I'm going to sell t-shirts with just the comma on them. And the people that are really in the book will know what it is, right? extreme example of self will run riot, comma, though he usually doesn't think so. Because I think I'm pulling it off. Now, y'all are all sitting in the half measures room drinking coffee talking about, can you believe how freaking off the beam she is, right? But I don't know that. I think I've got it handled. And then it says, above everything. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. Why? Right? Then it says, and there often seems no way, God makes that possible, and there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Why do I have to get rid of self? Because at certain times, the alcoholic will have no effective mental defense against that first drink. My defense must come from a higher power. If I am full of self, I am not connected to God. I cannot be self-centered and God-dependent at the same time. I cannot be self-sufficient and God-reliant at the same time. So for every moment that I am busy arranging the lights, the scenery, the ballet, the play, the players, right? The money, the kids, the job, the schedule, the image, right? For every minute that I am concerned with those things, I am in jeopardy of dying from untreated alcoholism. That's what it's telling me right here. So it says, there often seems no way of power, blah, blah, blah. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, right? I know right from wrong. I've always known right from wrong, right? But we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help. That's how come on page 55, they said he either is or he isn't. Because if I don't believe that he is, I cannot recover. I don't care what he is. What is irrelevant. But I have to concede that there is a power greater than me, or I cannot recover from untreated alcoholism. Because I have to have God's help to be entirely rid of self. This is the how and the why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. That's depressing. But the next sentence is one of my favorites, right? Why do I have to quit playing God? Because it doesn't work. My sponsor would say, because it doesn't work, dummy. It didn't work, period. If I could, I would. But I suck at it, right? I'm just no good at it. I'm not qualified for that job. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God is going to be our director. He is the principal, and we are his agents. He is the father. We are his children. Most good ideas are simple, unless you give them to an alcoholic, and then they will become complicated. This concept is the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. Okay, so what's the concept? The concept is there is a power greater than there is a power, right? And it's not me, right? That's the concept. There is a director. There's a boss man. There's a manager, right? I'm not that. I don't care what it looks like, right? Call it God, call it higher power, call it creator, call it, I don't care, right? I just have to concede the managing. I have to say, I'm not the director. I'm not the boss. I'm not in charge, right? And then the top of page 63, which I still read two or three times a week, right? When we sincerely take that position, the position of resigning the being in charge, all sorts of remarkable things follow. Now, I will tell you just as a side note, because I'm sort of a big book nerd. These are the only promises in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous that are past tense. I just find that interesting because they did the third step one time. Because what they used to say is once you've taken the third step, your life is no longer any of your business. Right? And so they take the third step once. The other steps are an ongoing process, right? So here's our remarkable things, right? Here are the promises for step three. We have a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provides what we need if we keep close to him and performed his work well. As an aside, I have found that God provides what I need even when I'm not doing a very good job of staying close to him and performing his work well. Established on such a footing, we become less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. There's a novel concept. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. It doesn't say we've lost our fear, right? But we begin to. We begin to have a sense, right, that there is something at work here besides me. We begin to sit in the meetings and listen to you guys share, and we begin to know all of a sudden, like, you know what, maybe they're not lying, right? Because if I listen to y'all tell the truth about your alcoholism, and then I'll go to your homes, that's what I did. I started following those people around because I thought they were making it up. I went into the old-timers' homes, and I met their kids, and I sat at their table, and I went on the 12-step calls with them, and I went and ate with them, and I hung out with them. Right? And they were living on an entirely different basis. Right? So now I'm starting to think there might be something to this. So it says, now we're at step three. Many of us said to our maker as we understood him. Wait, I want to take a break from that before I go to the prayer. The thing I love so much about this third step promises is that all of us have had a job. So when I say God's the employer, I understand being an employee. I just show up for work. The boss gives me the agenda. I don't even have to like it. I don't have to agree with the agenda. I just have to do the job that the boss gave me to do that day, and I get paid. Right? I can get in that relationship with a power greater than myself. I can get in a place where I'm working for a new employer. And there's a rabbi that I listen to that I love. I'm not Jewish, but I don't care, right? I heard a speaker last week say, I'm a Christian, Buddhist, Jewish seeker. And I was like, me too. I don't know what that means, but there's a rabbi that I listen to, and he says, we are to do God's work, not God's job, right? And that makes sense to me when you put it in this context. I can go to work. I'm an excellent employee, as a matter of fact. So because my boss tells me what he wants me to do, I go do it. It's that relationship. That's one of the reasons I love those promises so much, because it gives me the concept of having an employer. Okay, now I'm going to get to the prayer. We are now at step three. Many of us said to our maker, as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Okay, so let's just talk about that for a minute. I'm saying here, I'm out. I offer myself to you to build with me and do with me whatever. You know why? Because when I get to Alcoholics Anonymous, every bridge is burned. I've scorched the earth behind me, right? I'm not welcome around the people that I care about, right? I have nothing to show for my life, right? I showed up at Alcoholics Anonymous with the 37 cents, a pair of cutoffs, a pair of flip-flops, and a hoodie. This is what I accomplish, right? When I apply my very keen intellect and my very best skills to the problem, I get 37 cents, cutoffs, flip-flops, and a hoodie, right? So I'm taking all of that, and I'm saying here, just take it. Do whatever you want. It can't be worse than this, right? The guy that saved my life at 4 years said, a monkey could do a better job of running your life than you're doing, right? He was not wrong. Then it says, relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better. I'm going to be done in probably one more minute, Levy, and then I'll wrap it up. I know I'm pretty close to time. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Why? Because this is what I always think of. You ever seen a horse? And they put those blinders on that horse, right? This is all there is when I'm in the bondage of self. I can see no other part of the world. It's all me. And I am watering my faulty root system, right? I am feeding it with shame and guilt and remorse and plans and schemes and self-seeking and dishonesty. And all right, I am all right here. That's all there is just right here. That's the bondage, right? And the spring starts to tighten, right? The screw just starts to tighten. So I'm saying, God, relieve me of this. And I mean it every time. I say this every morning, right? And every morning I mean it. Please relieve me of that bondage. But why? Not so I will be comfortable. That's not what it says. Relieve me of the bondage of self. How come? So that I may better do thy will. They're starting to give us a little hint of what Alcoholics Anonymous is really all about, right? This prayer is really your first good clue. Take away my difficulties. Those are not my financial problems. That is not the husband. That is not the bad behaved kids. That is not the bad job. My difficulties are selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, fear, pride, right? Those are the difficulties. Take away those difficulties. Why? So that victory over them, right, may bear witness to those I would help of your power, your love, and your way of life. It's not for me. Again, I'm not saying relieve me of the bondage of self and take away my difficulties so I can eat bonbons on my couch and be financially secure. That's not what it says, right? So that I may better do thy will and so that I can carry this message. Victory over them would bear witness that I could carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous as a person who is free from untreated alcoholism, right? So that I may bear witness to those I would help of your power, your love, and your way of life. May I do your will always, right? And then they get you. First the prayer, and then they say, we thought well before taking the step. But if you've just read the prayer, you already took the step. So it doesn't matter whether you thought well about it or not. Making sure we were ready that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. My experience has been that step works remarkably well, whether I mean it or not, and whether I'm ready or not. I think that's it. Sorry for running over. Thank you for having me again.